This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we're going to talk to a new suspense author, somebody I've never talked to before. Her new book is called The Perfect Stranger, and it's out from Simon & Schuster. It's got a really dark black and blue and purple cover. I love this cover. Hello!
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All right, and look at the house on the cover is ridged. That's really, it's like a 3D cover almost.
It's really cool. Yeah, it had some texture to it.
You're writing these books pretty fast. It seems like you just had the last book out, All the Missing Girls, which really made quite a splash.
Yeah, thanks. Yes, All the Missing Girls came out last summer, and then The Perfect Stranger just came out. I had written some of The Perfect Stranger before All the Missing Girls came out, though, so that helped.
That's why. That explains why it came out so quickly. I was like, April. Boy, it seems like she had one last year.
Right.
And it's just come out. I think it came out the 21st of April, is it?
It came out the 11th, I believe.
Oh, the 11th. Okay, even sooner than I thought. I know they moved up the date because they covered it over with a new date. And they moved the date up. Must be pretty excited about this book. So what was... All the Missing Girls was such an unusual book. Tell me how that came about. Why did you decide to write the book that way? It's sort of like almost backward, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's sort of a brief introduction in part one, and then the ending kind of jumps back there. But the majority of the book in part two moves back over the course
of... So why did you do that? What made you want to do that?
So that was sort of the heart of the idea. I'd had this idea in my head for a while that I wanted to tell the unwinding of a mystery. I'm somebody who starts with characters first, and I'm really interested in exploring character motivations, and I thought it would be sort of an interesting way to explore character motivations, that is, each, as you move back a day, you're stripping away another layer of why something happened, and so you would kind of be, you know, working your way back through the pieces. And that was sort of the inspiration for it, but it sat for a while, and it took me a while to come up with what was the right story for this, and it had to be tied really tightly to this theme of needing to go back into the past for answers. So it all kind of eventually came together when I came up with the main character, Nicolette.
I'm astounded. There's so many great women writers out there, and when I worked at the bookstore, I remember there were men that would come in and say that they don't read women writers. And I used to think, well, why would you limit yourself? I mean, why are you judging somebody to be based on their gender as far as whether they can write or not? But I can't imagine a world without women writers.
Oh, no. Some of my very favorite psychological suspense writers right now are, you know, Tana French and Gillian Flynn and Megan Abbott. They're such wonderful work right now.
Yeah, Gillian, I wish you'd come out with a new book, a full-length book, I mean, not the shorter one like the last one was. I want a book just like Gone Girl. I'm very, very possessive that way. It's like, just give me another one like that. Don't give me these in-between books, you know? And as much as I know they can do it, I'm disappointed. I guess I'm not the only one. But
I'm definitely looking forward to her next one.
Right. Is she working on now? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Oh, really? I thought you said it like you knew her personally.
Oh, no. I just love her work. Yeah.
I was going to say, sure. It'd be cool if you do, you know?
Yeah.
But I hope she... I'm assuming she must be working on something. I mean, aren't authors always writing at some point?
I think so, yeah. I do.
I mean, they never just sit back and do nothing.
No, you're either writing or you're thinking about writing or researching for writing or editing your writing. Yes.
So Is All the Pretty Girls similar to, what was that movie, Memento, where everything was backward, or is it different than that?
I think it's you know, sort of the thing you can compare it to when you're thinking of something that moves in reverse, but I do think it's different. I remember seeing Memento when it first came out, and it is something that really stuck in my head. It was really the first time I'd seen something like that, and I thought it was great because it was really tied to, you know, the main character had anterograde amnesia, and so he couldn't remember things, you know, shortly after they happened. So I felt that the structure of the story and the way they told it was so perfect because it really, you know, the person watching it was sort of as disoriented as well, and kind of puts you in that frame of mind. And so I would say there's a lot of differences, but it is sort of the thing that you can compare it to because it has that.
Well, and the biggest fear, you know, when I opened up All the Mystic Girls, I thought, well, I hope I don't see something in the beginning of the book that really should be the ending, and I'm going to find out for the mystery is going to be solved in the beginning of the book instead of the ending because it'll spoil the whole book.
Right.
But obviously that doesn't happen, or you wouldn't be able to write the book.
Yeah, no, and I did. I actually I wrote it in the order that it's read because I wanted it to really have that flow of the story and how you're getting to know the main characters and what information is being revealed at what point. And I was trying to be very careful about how much information to give away up front so that you didn't spoil.
So it's divided into days. What those days are. Or what days exactly?
So the book begins with the main character driving back home on family business.
Right.
She's in Philadelphia, she moves to North Carolina. And so then it jumps 2 weeks after her return home, and it begins on day 15 and moves back to day one. And on the first day, her neighbor had gone missing. And so she's sort of unraveling the crime of what happened to her neighbor, but also what happened 10 years ago to her best friend who disappeared without a trace.
Well, you're right. It does go back. I was thinking I saw day one. Maybe I was looking at the back of the book.
When she's driving home at the very start of the book.
That's why.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Day one. That you're confusing me, Megan. You know
yes.
that.
No.
That's why I was confused when you started to say, I don't remember it. I'm thinking to myself, I don't remember it starting at 15 and going back to one.
Right. Now, the part one does start on day one when she's driving home, and then part two jumps to day 15 and goes back in time to day one.
You seem to have a theme of missing people. Is that intentional? Do you like writing books about missing people?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so when I started All the Missing Girls, that was, I usually start with sort of a theme in mind or something I'm interested in exploring, and this idea of disappearing was really the idea for All the Missing Girls and the different ways people can disappear. So there's the girls who walk into the woods and don't come back out, and then there's, choosing to leave a place, and then it was this idea of if there were, previous versions of ourselves who could disappear as well, if we could become somebody new. And so I do find that I am sort of drawn to the same types of themes and just kind of explore them in different ways. So in The Perfect Stranger, someone goes missing, but it's more of a book about identity and how much we know about the people around us and ourselves. And in this case, it's there's no evidence that she was ever there to begin with. So it's sort of a different twist on a similar thing.
Well, one of the reasons we're talking is because I really like The Perfect Stranger. I have not finished, I'll be honest with you, I have not finished All the Missing Girls yet, so I don't, the jury's out for that one for me. But, I really liked Perfect Stranger. So
Thank you so much.
Does that bother you? Somebody would say to you, well, I love one of your books and didn't like the other. Would that bother you?
No, it wouldn't. And I think, as a reader, there's certain books that I prefer my favorite authors over others. And I think that's very normal. And I think different books are for different people. So, yeah.
There was a book that Laura Lippman wrote, and I'm trying to remember the title of it even as we're talking here. It's about two girls that go to the mall and one of them disappears. It is one fantastic. What's that?
I read that too, yes.
That was, for some reason, I think it's the best thing she ever wrote. Something resonated with that book. And that's what you find with books, something about it. The ones you love the best are the ones where something happens that you can really relate to. And it doesn't necessarily have to be something that happened. I'm sure you've never had any missing people in your life, somebody who went missing. I'm sure this never happened in your life. Because to find somebody who... that's happened is probably very rare, even though it seems to happen a lot. When you go up to the board at Walmart, you see all these missing kids, and all you can think of is, oh my God, how are the parents coping with something like that?
Yes, it's a terrifying thought.
Terrifying. You think to yourself, how would I even go on knowing my child was out there somewhere and I didn't know whether they were safe or not?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even sleep. If I were a parent, I would not be able to sleep. And all I can do is put my heart on that person and think, oh, man, I just don't know what to say. You know, and it is hard to say. I go all the way back to that movie, Adam, with Daniel Travanti. Oh, that was on.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
If you ever get a chance, watch that movie. Watch the scene where he comes back to the hotel room after he's processing that Adam is no longer is no longer alive. And watch the scene where he comes back to the hotel room. It is just the most incredible scene you'll ever see in a TV movie ever. And it'll just break your heart. But it's so powerful at the same time that it's that you cannot take your eyes off of him at all. But we're on the theme of missing kids, but there aren't any missing kids in these books. Somehow I segued into missing children.
Well, I do think, you know, there's it is like, for me, when I'm reading a book or watching a movie or like a TV show, as you were saying, there's something that, it's sort of the emotional resonance that makes something really linger with me, kind of like you were saying.
Right. And I'm thinking, for some reason, I'm thinking of Leanne Moriarty, too, who writes these books about, she'll tell you in the beginning that something really bad happened, and then she'll tease you for the rest of the book up until the end, and then you find out, damn, what really happened.
Yes.
But the way she does it is so incredible. It's like, and you have to read the rest of the book. You can't possibly not read the rest of the book.
Oh, yeah. I find every book of hers brilliant, and I feel like they sneak up on you over time, too, and you're almost, you don't even know what, like, there's something even deeper that then comes to the surface as you're reading. I love her books.
So which of these two books was harder to write? Now, All the Missing Girls or The Perfect Stranger, which was harder, or were they both equally hard?
You know, they had different challenges, but I would say, like, logistically, All the Missing Girls was more difficult to write. I'm not somebody who sort of does a lot of plotting beforehand, and so I usually write my way into stories, and then I have to kind of step back, figure out what I'm doing, and edit. And just based on the structure of All the Missing Girls, I would, you know, get a couple days in and figure something out, and then everything I'd already written would need to change because technically that came later. So I had, you know, lots of spreadsheets for each day to keep track of what the reader knew versus what the narrator knew and to kind of walk the line. So just logistically it was harder, it was more difficult, it took me more drafts. But I think there's different sort of challenges with The Perfect Stranger as well, kind of figuring out, you know, when to give certain information and when to withhold it. So it's just, it depends.
So you wrote children's books. Are you still writing children's books, or have you completely gone over to adult novels now?
I am still writing young adult fiction. They're also primarily suspense novels, and so I have a new one coming out in January, and another one I'm working on, so I am still doing both.
Right. I wasn't demeaning by saying children's books. You corrected me quite well. So.
No.
I mean, when I was a kid, we didn't have what you call young adult books.
Right.
They weren't around. It was all, you know, I was reading Encyclopedia Brown, and I was reading Nancy Drew, and I never thought of young adult books. I didn't know what they were.
I remember jumping from Nancy Drew to, like, reading Edgar Allan Poe, sort of.
That's quite a jump. Nancy Drew probably didn't even know who Edgar... No, I'm sure Nancy Drew did know who he was. But the beautiful thing about Nancy Drew is she never aged. And I used to think, she never gets any older. I love that about her. She never gets a wrinkle. But and that's I don't know, for some reason that thrilled me, and you know, I thought, I think it you say to yourself, well, maybe I can be like that, maybe I'm not going to age either, and maybe I'm putting blinders on, but it's still a good feeling for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's really twisted, I know, but I really. But so, which would you rather write, or do you really want to write both?
I do want to write both. You know, I was I love reading both as well, and I was I started, before I was a writer, I was a high school science teacher, and I think that sort of was my transition to starting in the young adult fiction. I had been sort of, you know, hearing their stories, and it brought me back to that time in my life, and I think there's some sort of, you know, hallmark of a young adult novel to me is sort of this coming of age element, and you know, this immediacy of experiencing things for the first time. And I'm very drawn to, even in my adult books, these events that happen when characters are 17 or 18 or 19 years old, kind of in that transition to adulthood, and how that impacts them later in life, whether they can move on or, you know, whether you can escape your past. So I think in both the adult and the young adult, there's something about that that I'm drawn to.
Now, are there missing people in the young adult novels also?
Some of them there are. It hasn't been sort of the main plot, but yeah, in my most recent one, The Safest Lies, the mother goes missing. So, yes.
So there's a connection there. That's three books where you have missing people.
I didn't realize that. Now I'm like, wow, that is three books of mine that I have missing people.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. If you do it the right way, it's perfect. I mean, I liked The Perfect Stranger. I liked the way you wrote the book. It's a very, very enjoyable book. So as long as somebody does it well, I don't mind the repetition. And it's not even really repetition if it's done well. You don't notice that. If a book's written well, it's written well. You can enjoy it. If it's not written well, you're confused, then you put the book down, maybe.
Right.
I mean, I know people that will pick up a book, and if they can't get into the first 10 pages, they give up on it. And that's pretty quick.
That is. 10 pages is pretty quick.
But, you know, or nearer to the front than other people. I give a book a chance, I usually do, but I really need to get into some kind of a story right away. Something's got to happen for me to enjoy it. And if you don't have that, you know, you're disappointed. You really want... Because sometimes somebody will say, you got to read this book, and you pick up the book, you start reading it, and you're like, I'm not enjoying this book. Why am I not enjoying it? You think there's something wrong with yourself.
Yeah, and I think different people are sort of drawn to different things. Like, for me, I'm also really drawn to, like, voice or writing style. Like, sometimes that, for me, is what hooks me right away, even before I realize what the story is.
Like, when you sat down to write The Perfect Stranger, what did you know the whole story before you started writing, or had you outlined, or what did you do? How do you start a book? I mean, you have a blank piece of paper, and where do you begin?
Yeah, I didn't. So the story kind of develops alongside the characters. So I had this idea for the main character, Leah, and I had sort of the pitch of, you know, there are going to be two women who reconnect years after they knew each other, and one was going to disappear, and there wasn't going to be evidence that she had ever sort of existed. And so that's what I started with, and I left myself a lot of freedom when I start drafting. And then when I get to about the 50-page mark, I try to make sure I know sort of what the turning points are that are coming up. But for me, it's more about discovering the backstory and the character motivations first, and then that kind of leads to the plot, if that makes sense. It kind of, the character kind of, it develops side by side, really. It's hard for me to develop a plot without, or a plot first, really.
I'm constantly amazed by writers that write two or three books a year, and I think, how do they do it? That's very hard. I mean, it's not as if you just sit down and the words come right to your head and you write them down on a piece of paper. It doesn't work that way. You really have to think it out. You really have to think, what are my characters' names going to be called? What do they do? What's the story? There's a lot that goes around in your head, I'm sure, when you're writing a book.
There is. And, you know, I wish that it just sort of flowed as soon as I sat down at a computer. But sometimes I'll get scenes that I see later on, and I'll just write them. And it feels like, so it's almost like you're piecing together, and you can almost see, like, the backbone of a story forming, and then you can kind of feel like it's becoming something whole.
Right, exactly. And that's... And I love to get into writers' heads and see what motivates them to write books. Everybody asks them where they get their ideas from.
Right.
And usually it's imagination. There are authors who say they dreamed a whole book. They'll say, well, that was a dream I had, and I wrote the book based on that dream. And you know, I think, well, that's interesting. I can't think of any dreams I have that I can make a story out of.
No, my dreams are really not that interesting either.
but to each his own. I think Stephen King could do it. I really believe that Stephen King could write a whole story based on his dreams. I mean, I don't doubt it at all, because I know how talented he is, and I know he's got such a vivid imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So, when did you write your first book? How old were you?
My youngest had just turned one when I sort of set myself the goal to finish my first book. And so at that point, I believe I was 27.
Right, we can't do the math because we don't know how old you are now. So don't worry. No, nor do we know how old your children are. They could be 20 for all we know. But you sound like you're about 18. I mean, you sound very young.
That's funny.
But everybody out there scrambling to do the math, you know, oh my God, she was 27. How old is she now?
Right.
But I mean, there's always that curiosity. Why are we such an age-obsessed society, do you think?
I'm not sure. It's really interesting to me, too, because, you know, I think when I was younger, I focused on it a lot more, and it just seems to matter less and less the older I get. I've been
watching that feud about Joan Crawford and Bette Davis. Absolutely fascinating.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
On FX, and Joan and Jessica Lange is just running away with it. She steals the whole show. I mean, she's this monstrously jealous, overbearing, old actress, and it's just the most wonderful thing to watch. And she's throwing flower pots at her assistant, her sort of like maid or assistant, and it's just wonderful stuff. I mean, it's just,
what is this called?
It's called Feud, and it's about Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. It's on FX on Sunday nights at 10.
Writing this down.
The last episode is airing this Sunday, so you'll have to. It'll probably be out on video soon, so you may want to wait. Just wait until it's one of those shows you really should watch, you should binge on, because you kind of forget. You don't necessarily have to, but it's such a wonderful show. And Bette Davis's daughter's in it, and she hates her mother, and it's just wonderful. It's just, I mean, when you think it really happened, it even becomes more compelling. I mean, and Stanley Tucci is the head of the studio, and he's screaming at everybody, and oh, it's just wonderful. So, do you think they'll ever make movies out of any of your books?
Well, I'm definitely keeping my fingers crossed. That would be.
Have you had an interest?
Yes, there's been some discussions. So
really,
keeping my fingers crossed.
And you can't tell us anything, right?
Not yet, no.
Oh, I hate when that happens. You know, you talk to an author and they can't tell you anything. Karen Slaughter was on a webcast just before I started talking to you, and she says, I have a big announcement for next Wednesday, but I can't tell you what it is. I'm like, no, that's just mean to do that to your fans. You know, you have to tell them to wait a week to hear it. By the time the week goes, they won't care anymore.
No. Anyway. I'd be checking back in.
But that's mean to do that. It's like telling somebody, I have a really big secret to tell you, and then walking away from them. It's like, that. You don't do that to people. You're not if you want to stay friends with them. So has there been more of an interest in All the Missing Girls?
Yes, so far. Yes.
How did I know that? I guess it's because it's such an unusual book. But I can't. I can see there being an interest in Perfect Stranger. This would make a really terrific movie.
Oh, I would be very excited to see that happen.
Now, you also, on All the Missing Girls also has a 3D cover.
Yeah, so they have like the Ferris wheel.
Does the Ferris wheel come into play in the book?
Yes, and it's sort of this central moment from their backstory, sort of the last time that this group of friends saw Corinne, who disappeared, is when they're all on this Ferris wheel together, and it's sort of the event that sets everything in motion. And so throughout the book, Nicolette keeps reflecting back to this Ferris wheel and that scene at the county fair.
How do you make sure that your characters aren't similar, like the characters in one book aren't similar to the characters in another? How do you do that and make sure that is, because that's an art to be able to do that. I've read authors where one book I'll read a character, and then another book I'll read another character, and they seem very similar, but you seem to be very good at that.
Well, thanks. Well, you know, the characters are really my favorite part. I really enjoy developing characters. And I think because it develops side by side with the plot, it ends up being that, you know, their internal struggle is often sort of reflected in the external plot, and so sort of the difficulties that come up with the plot end up being sort of the things that they have to come face to face with themselves. So I think that the different storylines also help determine different types of characters with different types of flaws and different elements of themselves that they're coming face to face with and trying to overcome.
What, All the Missing Girls, did that make the New York Times?
It did, yes.
What did it get up to?
It was on the paperback list. It's been on for, I think, 6 weeks, and it's up to number 7, I think.
That's terrific. Did it make the hardcover, too?
No, it did not.
But it must have come close.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I Not entirely sure.
That's great, though. I mean, so in between the hardcover and the paperback, there was a tremendous interest somewhere. Even after the hardcover came out, there must have been something that happened. That's really great.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been very grateful for sort of, you know, word of mouth of people reading and talking about it. It's been fantastic.
Do you ever get letters from men?
Yes, I do. I do.
I was curious why, because I don't know any men. I don't know. I don't mean to say any, but I don't have any men friends that read a lot of novels, and it seems to be very hard for me to find men that read novels. And I always look online for, because I'd love to have like a men's discussion group of but you never see that. You never see a book group with all men. Have you ever seen one?
I'm not sure. I gotta think about it. I don't know. I definitely do get emails from male readers as well, though. So.
What do they say to you? What kind of things are they saying?
They're usually saying what they enjoyed about a book, or it's usually been just sort of nice emails about, you know, what they enjoyed about the book. And
I wasn't trying to imply they said other things personal, or they were trying to ask you out or something, you know.
No.
Although I'm sure writers get that sometimes, you know. Because Stephen King claims that he did a book signing once and somebody brought him a packet of blood.
Oh.
And you think about that and you think, well, what do you do when somebody does that? You just say, please stay away from me. You know, I don't. I mean, I don't even know what I would do.
No, neither do I.
And it's just, and I remember I got a letter from Dean Koontz one time. It had these little red dots dripping down the bottom of the letter like it was blood. But it wasn't real blood.
Right.
But it was like, it was so cool that he did that.
That's really cool.
And it's like, that's a once in a lifetime letter. You don't get that very often. But
yeah.
Who were your favorite authors growing up?
Well, I was a big Michael Crichton fan when I was in high school. I was a kid who loved science and I loved reading, and one of my teachers gave me like Jurassic Park, and that was sort of like an eye-opening book for me. And I read a lot of thrillers as well, and I read Dean Koontz, and I was also inspired by young adult fiction writers more recently as well. John Green and Mary Pearson and Marcus Zusak are big inspirations for me.
Yeah, John Green has gotten huge.
Yes, and his first book, Looking for Alaska, is one of my very, very favorite books of all time.
It's an interesting title. It's one of those titles you think, what in the world, what is it, like a geographical book, or should it be in the travel section or something?
No, it's about a girl named Alaska.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Her name is Alaska.
Her name is Alaska.
You could probably look in the whole state of where you live and not find a girl named Alaska anywhere. And that's another thing about life. Life is so interesting that when you walk into a restaurant, you see these weird names of people, and you think, where did they come up with that name? I really want to go up and ask them, you know? You have this, like, insatiable curiosity to find out, why did your mother name you that?
It's funny, because people also ask, like, character names, why do you name the person that? And sometimes I'm just like, I have no, you know, it's just like, they come to you sometimes, and it just feels like the right thing, and it's funny. I can't ever answer this.
Speaking of funny, your name sounds like it's like you're like an actress or something. Like is this your real name? Were you born with that name?
It is my real name. I married into it.
Oh, so that's Miranda's your married name.
Yes.
But it's interesting. I mean, it sounds just like a writer's name.
Yeah, and it's funny. I get asked that a lot, if it's my real name.
So. People think she's a phony. She writes fiction and she's not even a real person. It's like, what goes through these people's minds, I don't know. And then, are you doing a book signing tonight?
I am, yes. I'm in Austin, Texas tonight, so I'll be at Book People.
Oh, okay. You're a couple hours from me. It's 4:30 here. What is it, 2:30 there?
It's 3:30.
3:30, so it's an hour. I never remember if it's an hour or two with the different time zones. So that's cool. Were you nervous at your first book signing?
Oh, yes. I was nervous my first several book signings.
What is it like when you first read from your book?
Well, I find I'm always... I always feel funny reading in front of people, especially my own words, so I have to practice it. And it's interesting because, you know, you say it in your head over and over, and I don't really read my words out loud, and so I'm sort of hearing it for the first time, too.
What would it be like for you to sit in the audience and listen to somebody else read it out loud? Would that make you uncomfortable?
Be interested to hear someone else's sort of interpretation or how they would read it. Yeah.
And one of the best authors I ever heard read from their book was Lawrence Block one time. And I was on a Barnes & Noble one night. He read from his book, and it was the most fascinating reading I've ever heard. And it's definitely an art to read a book the way it should be read.
Yeah.
Out loud, I'm talking about. And you listen to some authors, and you know they're not really into reading it. They're just trying to get through it, and they want to sell their book, but they're not really thrilled about reading from their book. Although most usually are, I guess. But it's an art, and to listen to people read. I think, was it Janet Ivanovich? I think Janet Ivanovich. I listened to her read her book one time, and she was wonderful, too. But you can only imagine that woman's crazy to begin with. I mean, just from the craziness that she writes in her book, you have to think, well, what kind of woman is this? If I met her on the street, is she as nutty as the characters in her book?
Oh, her books are so fun, too. I love them.
Now, you're from New Jersey.
I am from New Jersey, yeah.
Where in New Jersey?
Freehold.
Freehold. My mom was born in... Palmyra.
Okay.
Which I don't know. That can't be more than, what, an hour from Freehold? I'm not even sure where. Is Freehold more in the central?
It's pretty central.
I think Palmyra is more in the southern part, I think.
Okay.
But that's interesting. We talk about, and it was like a segue, and I didn't mean it to be a segue. So how do you get time to read other people's works? And doesn't it influence your own writing when you read others?
Well, I try not to read. I still try to read a lot. I have sort of my working hours, which is when my kids are in school. So like from 9 to 3 is when I'm sort of in the office. And then, you know, I read sort of in the evenings and on weekends. And if I'm drafting a certain type of book, like if I'm drafting psychological thriller, I might not read something that's too similar. And not just because I'm worried about doing something too similar, but sometimes I'll read something and I'll feel like it might be too similar and I'll like veer off in another direction when maybe the story doesn't call for that. So I'll read a lot more of the mysteries and thrillers on the adult side when I'm drafting like a young adult book. And then I kind of switch and I'll read more young adult when I'm...
Do you remember what you were reading while you were writing The Perfect Stranger?
I don't. I was writing it over the course of 9 months, so I was reading a lot.
Is that normally what it takes, about 9 months to write the whole book from beginning to end, even with the revisions?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's hard to say exactly because, you know, I stop sometimes and I'll work on something else, but I think that's probably what it averages to before it's sort of in shape for me to send to my editor.
It's interesting when writers get to be big enough, writers like Sue Grafton, they can take 2 or 3 years to write a book, whereas you're writing a book every year, so that you have constant pressure on you to get a book done.
Yeah, I usually am very excited to sort of sit down and work on a new project. I'm about 2/3 of the way through my next adult book right now, and I really enjoy this stage of it.
Oh, really? 2/3 already?
Well, it's a first draft. There'll have to be a lot of revising.
But do you ever get frustrated writing?
Oh, sure, sure.
Do you ever get to the point where you just say, I can't do this, I can't do it? Do you lose confidence sometimes?
Well,
obviously, you know what you're doing because The Perfect Stranger is a good book. You obviously know what you're doing. I don't know how many books you've written now, counting the young adult ones, but...
That was my 7th, The Perfect Stranger.
So you've written 7 books. So you pretty much know what you're doing, but you do still have doubts?
Oh, sure. I think every book comes with doubts, especially, you know, in the middle for me is when I get a lot of doubts because the middle is when I have to figure everything out, so I get to that point, and that's when I'm making sure I have the plot worked out and everything's logical and where is this going, and, you know, that's when I'll start to sort of question, like, wait, why did I do this setup? And I think, you know, I have to just kind of set that voice aside.
How important is the ending to you? The ending is a shock.
Oh, very, very. The endings are very important to me. I think it's sort of the feeling that you leave people with.
It's that last. There's a book out now by Claire McIntosh called I See You.
Yes, I just read that.
And, oh, so you know the end. Oh, my God.
I do.
That ending just totally blew me away.
Yes.
Like, I've never been blown away, ever. And yet, I gave it to a friend of mine, and I said, you have to read this book. She gets, like, 30 pages, and she said, this is boring. I can't read this. Or, I was really slow, and I thought, are you reading the same book that I did?
Wow.
And I thought, because it's such a fascinating book, and that shock at the ending is so powerful.
It is.
And the way she did it. Right, we can't talk more about that because it'll give something away. But if anybody out there is listening, go get that book because you're going to love it. It's just, there's something about that. I'm amazed you read it. You're the only person I talked to that's read it.
Oh, really? Yeah, my mom read it before me, too. She told me she loved it, so, yeah.
But it begs the question, is there a sequel to that book? And I have... they wouldn't let me interview her for some reason. Her publicist was very weird about it. But although I did get a reaction from her, she was willing to do it. But you know, sometimes the publicist can't arrange it. Whatever happened. But I'm dying to know whether there's going to be a sequel to that book. So you've never written a series?
No, I did have. So my first book has a companion novel to it that happens after, and it's from a different character's perspective.
But do your readers, when they write in, do they say to you, I want to see more of that character?
I will get a lot of times people asking, is there a sequel? Are you thinking about writing a sequel? And I'd say, like, I never say never, because you never know, but I don't, when I set out to write a book and I have the ending, it's sort of how I intend it, that, like, I'm happy leaving it where it is.
Oh, so you're going to torture your readers like crazy by not bringing their favorite characters back. Lisa Scottolini did that to me. She had this gay character in her first book that was absolutely phenomenal, and that was the end of that character. And she never brought the character back. And I'm still angry to this day. It's been 20-some years, and I'm still... Have you ever read Lisa Scottolini?
Yes, I don't think I've read that book, though.
That was Everywhere That Mary Went. That was the first one. But that character, there's something about that character. You read that book if you ever get a chance.
Okay.
And that character... is so wonderful, and you fall in love with it's a man, and the character's just like, I want to know more about this character. He's so funny,
right.
And he's so I think authors, when they write a great character, it's just that's that character. You want to know more about it. Lee Child with his Jack Reacher. I mean, the list goes on and on and on about characters that Lucas Davenport, never get tired of him either. And it's just so, but you never have that worry. You get done the book and you're on to new characters.
I think so. I think it might be because, like, that's sort of my favorite part of the process is sort of, like, of starting a new book is developing these new characters. And, my mind sort of goes to the standalone book.
Well, it's not like you could have a book where there's a detective and every book there's somebody missing. That wouldn't work really well.
Right.
I don't think that would work. I mean, it's like Jessica Fletcher on Murder, She Wrote. Everywhere she went, there was a murder. I'd be like, I don't want to be anywhere near you, woman. I mean, realistically, that's how you would feel.
True.
And don't get me wrong, I loved Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But, I mean, I could just watch it and try to figure out who did it. And some of them were really brilliant. I wouldn't say they were all really brilliant, but it in real life, that's how you would feel, I think. I don't know. And it's like Stephen King. People think, well, what kind of weird person is he? What would he be like to meet? He must really be warped to write some of that, the stuff that he's written. I don't know how many Stephen King books you've read, but you don't have to read very many to realize that there's some warped something in his brain. what you write is pretty normal. I don't know if I would say it was everyday stuff. I mean, people don't go missing every day. They do, but it's not like this. I mean, it's sort of unusual. But do ideas constantly come into your brain?
Yeah, they sort of will start coming to me when I'm in the middle of the book that I'm supposed to be writing. You know, when I'm staring at the computer screen and I know I need to work on this project, and you sort of get the bright, shiny idea that looks like fun to write. And so I'll start to just jot down ideas, but I don't let myself really write them. I kind of like leave them as incentive for me, like, okay, when I finish this book, I can start to work on this, so that by the time I get there, I sort of do have a lot of different ideas that are working together at that point.
Yeah, what's your biggest fear, would you say?
Like in
general, just in general. I mean, it can be anything.
Gosh, I don't know. I have a lot of fears. I don't know what my biggest fear
is. And none you want to talk about it. Everybody at home's like, come on, press her. Make her say something.
No, I mean, I'm. It's interesting because, like, I was talking at a book event a little while ago about, you know, how I was this kid who was really drawn to the darker side of fiction, and it was, you know, it seemed odd to other people because I was a kid who was afraid of a lot of things. And I did have a lot of fears growing up, but I was drawn to these mysteries and thrillers and darker books, I think, because I saw them as, like, a way that as a reader you make it through.
Maybe what you could do is in future books you could have a different fear with each book, and then we would know after five books what all your fears were.
Well, what's funny is my last young adult book, The Safest Lies, I wrote, it was basically about fear, and it was like the inspiration was like, well, I've had a lot of fears my whole life, surely I can put them all into a book. And so I was it was about whether fears could be passed down or whether they were inherited or whether we just sort of were exposed to them from the people around us, and that's why we had them. And so I was doing all this research because the characters in the book are basically in this house that's set up like a fortress, and every time I'd research something, I was like, okay, I need this in my house, and I'm like, I need this security system. And then it was like all those fears were coming into my mind as I was writing this book, and it was a crazy experience. But then I finished the book, and I was like, okay, that was, I didn't need to really think I needed, you know, a safe room in the middle of my house that they have in this book.
It must be a good feeling when you finish a book and you think, oh, and you breathe a sigh of relief and you say, that's done. But how much of a break do you take between one book and another?
Not much break at all.
Really? You just jump right into a new book?
Yes, I do. And I'm usually like really excited at that point to start. Like I'll have like an idea that's been in my head, and I won't say that I'll necessarily start drafting and just be like, oh, I have to finish this first draft. But I will start sort of writing scenes here and there and trying to develop it further. I pretty much start the next day.
So you're really dedicated to this writing thing.
I do love it.
Do you know why you love it? I mean, is it just because you read so much as a kid and now you love writing, or what is it?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it wasn't my first career, and I loved writing growing up, and I didn't really know people who were writers. And like I said, I also loved science.
Right.
And I went into the science field because it felt like, well, if I got a degree in biology, then I knew I could get a job in this field, and there was like a career trajectory that I could see. And I thought I would just keep writing on the side because it was the passion of mine, but I let it go for a while. And, you know, it was sort of that moment of, you know, if this is my passion, why am I not taking a real shot at it when I really started up again? And
yeah.
It's just been going since.
Now, All the Pretty Girl, All the Missing Girls was written after you had done a lot of the young adults. So you were already established as a writer, just not as an adult fiction
right.
writer. So that was, what was the reaction when you first handed that book in?
Oh, well, you mean to my agent?
Yeah.
So I had let her know that I was working on this as an adult project, and she'd heard about the idea before, and it was more that, you know, the idea seemed to fit, sort of dictated that it was going to be an adult book. I had this idea of a mystery in reverse, and I felt the characters had to have, you know, this element of hindsight looking back, and so she was completely on board with it and was very excited when I turned it into her, so, yeah.
That's great, because you never know what the reaction is going to be from your agent. Although you had written before, so you pretty much know what they're looking for, I guess. I mean, as a writer, you know what maybe you know what sells to some extent?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's hard to think that way sometimes. You know, to write with thinking, is it going to sell in mind? And I wasn't sure when I was writing All the Missing Girls, but it was like the idea that wouldn't let me go, that I kept coming back to year after year, thinking about, and then it finally clicked, and I was like, this is the book I have to write. And you just hope that somebody else is going to also want to read it.
Now, have you had any nominations for any kind of awards for All the Missing Girls at all?
No, it's been like a Junior Library Guild selection, and I'm actually going to be in San Antonio at the Texas Library Association tomorrow. It was on their Lariat adult reading list. So it's been on some reading lists. But
So do you have a title for the next book? Can you tell us what it is? Or
I don't have a final title for the next book yet.
Do you have anything you're working? I mean, you can't even say a tentative title?
I will say that I am, most of the time, titles do not come easily for me, and so usually I will just sort of call the document, like, Adult Book 3 until I turn it in, because...
Adult Book 3, now, yeah. No, my listeners are not going to be satisfied with that, you know that.
No, I'm sorry, my titles change so much because I'm usually not the one who comes up with the final title. I try. And
right.
Really get the right title.
Well, titles are hard. I mean, somebody, you know, when you hear a title, it either clicks or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, well, Girl on the Train, I mean, that it's been such a phenomenally successful book. But when you first hear that title, you think, well, that sounds like some kind of a kid's book, Girl on the Train, you know. It doesn't exactly light your fire.
But I think when it's in conjunction, it depends, because I think it goes hand in hand with the cover sometimes, you know, the way it's together, because when I saw the Girl on the Train cover, it really was compelling.
And what you ask yourself is, why does a book like that sell 20 million? I think it's 20 million. It's unbelievable the number of copies it sold. And why does another book like yours, which, The Perfect Stranger, which is equally good, I think, and doesn't sell as well? Why is that?
Who knows? I am not sure. No.
And, you know, and people, maybe people, I know people that didn't like Girl on the Train. I love Girl on the Train.
I mean, yeah, I did too.
And I felt like a voyeur reading it. I felt like, well, I'm looking through people's houses, and I feel like, and I'm enjoying this. And I thought, why am I enjoying being a voyeur? But that's kind of a weird thing to say, but, I mean, who isn't curious about other people's lives sometimes?
Right. Right.
We all have that. I don't care who you are. Everybody's got some kind of curiosity about other people.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And if we didn't have that curiosity, you wouldn't be able to be a writer.
Yes.
But, I mean, you don't do that kind of research. You don't go out and find missing person cases and find out what the story was behind them.
No, they're not based on true events, no.
But Mary Higgins Clark made a good point on CBS This Morning a couple weeks ago. She said she actually went to trials to listen to what was happening.
That's a great idea. That's really interesting.
And she said what you can find out listening to the, going and then watching the trial is amazing. He gets all kinds of ideas.
That's interesting.
And, you know, and I thought, wait, this is one smart woman. She's almost 90 years old, and she's full of smartness. You know? And
yeah.
110 million copies of her book sold. I mean, the woman knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, she may not, I mean, I love Mary Higgins Clark's books. I don't think her characters are developed as fully as I want them to be sometimes. But some of them are. And, you know, to develop a character so you really know the character and you really feel like from page to page you're fascinated by what's going to happen to that character, that's difficult to do.
Yeah.
Because, the publishing industry nowadays is all about getting more and more and more out. You know, get that book out, get it out, and get, you know, and sell it. And that, it makes sense because that's how they make their living. That's how the business is run. But to really pick up a book and feel like you know that character, how many times does that happen?
Those are always my favorite books, like the books where you connect right away to a character. Like, that's what makes me want to take the journey.
So I think you should go to a trial and get some ideas.
That is a good idea.
Yes. Don't tell her I told you that, though.
Okay.
She told all those millions of people on CBS this morning, though. But I'm really looking forward to the next book. You're so much fun to talk to.
Oh, thanks. This is fun for me, too.
And The Perfect Stranger, which is out from Simon & Schuster, I'll just mention that again. I love the colors on this book. I'm a very colorful person. I love color.
Yeah.
I don't want an all-black book.
No, yeah, I like it a lot. It really, it jumps out to me.
And I like the fact that your name is in pink.
Yeah.
So we know you're a woman. These days you don't know, really. Mm. I mean, you really don't. But it's interesting that the first book, you're in yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I think it's just it was changing the color scheme, you know, cover to cover.
Right. Oh, so we won't have pink for the next one.
I don't know. We'll
if
see.
It's blue, we'll start to think you're a man. No, I'm just kidding.
That's my favorite color.
Blue's your favorite color?
Yes.
Now watch. If I pick up your next book and it's got blue as your name, if your name's in blue, I'm going to laugh out loud. I really am. So the next book will probably be out next April, you think?
I think probably next summer is the plan.
Oh, really? So now we've got to wait a year and two months?
I'm not sure. It could be May. It could be. I'm not sure.
You really want to make your readers suffer that much?
I'm sorry.
I don't think you are sorry. I think you really enjoy it.
No.
Well, as a writer, though, you somewhat love to keep your readers in suspense.
Yeah, definitely. You do want them to have to, you know, not get everything. You don't, in a story at least, you don't want, you know, to give everything away up front. So, suspense is good in a story.
This has been a lot of fun. And thank you. And I wish you well at your event tonight.
Thank you.
I would guess, you know, doing those events is fun, but I guess when you get back to the hotel room, you can collapse and lay down. That's good, too.
Yes.
not that meeting people isn't a great thing. Of course it is. But
no, it's great.
But it is. I doubt that people come up to you at your signing and say, you know, I really hated your book.
Thankfully, that doesn't seem to happen.
I don't think many people have the nerve to do that. And thankfully, your book is really good, so it's not going to happen, I'm sure. But I really mean that. I'm not just saying that because we're doing the interview. We are doing the interview because I like the book.
Well, that's so great to hear.
It has. If you don't like a book, what would be the sense, you know?
Right.
Anyway, it's been fun. This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.